Well, hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to all of our Tenpenny Files premium members found here on Podbean, and you can also find it at drtenpenny.com. During our deep dives, we want to have a conversation with our guests about what inspires them and to find out a little bit more about who they really are. Let me introduce to you today's guest, Dr. Scott Jensen. Dr. Scott Jensen has practiced family medicine in Carver County, Minnesota for over 35 years. Dr. Scott and his wife, Mary, a small animal veterinarian, have raised three very successful children, a daughter who's an anesthesiologist, a daughter who's a family practice doctor, and a son who's an estate attorney. So they have a very successful family going on up there in Minnesota. Dr. Scott Jensen served in many organizations as a board member or chairman, including Waconia School Board, numerous Rotary and Lions clubs, several chambers of commerce, and bank boards. In 2001, he founded Catalyst Medical Clinic, which now has offices located in Watertown and Chaska, Minnesota. In 2016, he received the prestigious award, Minnesota Family Physician of the Year, from the Minnesota Academy of Family Physicians. He taught at the University of Minnesota Medical School for more than 30 years and retired as an associate professor in 2020. He's an avid pilot, a writer. He published his first book in 2015 called Relationship Matters, and he's about to release just next month a new book, The Day the Doctor Told the Truth. I just think that's just like the best title ever. And I think every physician needs to read it. So welcome to our deep dive today, Dr. Scott Jensen. Thank you so much for taking your extra time to do this.
Thank you, Sherry, for having me. We always have interesting conversations, don't we?
Yes, we do. And I always tell some of my guests, and I would say the same thing to you, is it's a good thing that we live like way apart. I'm in Ohio and you're Minnesota. I might just be hanging out in your living room and neither one of us would get anything done because I just love conversations with you.
Well, if we did hang out in the living room together, I'll tell you one thing. We would not watch Ohio State play Minnesota in football. That does never end well for us.
Okay, that's great. Well, start, Dr. Scott, I'd really like to have you start out a little bit about telling us about who you are. I mean, did you grow up in Ohio? And what was your early childhood like? And what made you decide that you wanted to become a physician?
Well, thank you, Sherry. I don't know if I've ever said this before, but I think I can almost describe my childhood a little bit like George Bailey's in It's a Wonderful Life. I grew up in a small town. I was the middle child of five. My dad was my hero. My mom was my best friend, an older sister and three brothers. It took a village to raise a child. And sometimes Scott Jensen would get in mischief. And sometimes parents would see that and they might let my mom and dad know that I maybe hadn't been at the best of my ability to make good decisions. And so that would circle back to me. And It was a wonderful place to grow up. And I really loved growing up there. I don't know that I realized at the time how unbelievably blessed I was. We were a middle-class family. I never heard my parents argue about finances, and yet we never had a lot. We got to go to the Dairy Queen once a month in the months of June, July, and August. We could get a dilly bar or a cone, but nothing more expensive. We didn't go out to eat much. I remember my first job was a paper out when I was about maybe 8 or 9. And then I mowed lawns and I laid sod. And then I worked at a restaurant where I cleaned the bathrooms in the morning before school. And then I'd work as a busboy at the tables and serving food. And then I worked for Del Monte. And that's what put me through college, was driving a lift truck for Del Monte. We did peas and corn, big part of my life. And then I went to college.
And you, that was all happened in Minnesota? You grew up in Minnesota?
I've been a Minnesotan for my entire life, growing up in Sleepy Eye from 0 to 18. And then at 18, I went to the University of Minnesota and I spent about a decade there. Then my wife and I, by then I was married, spent a couple of years in Wabasha. Now I've been in Carver County for, she was 35 years. You know, it's interesting growing up in Sleepy Eye. I think one of the things that always puzzled me, and it gave me pause. When I was a kid, I remember having, like a lot of kids do, you know, you have your fears. And I remember for me, I had this fear of death, that someone close to me might die. I remember being 10 or 11 years old and not being able to sleep very well at night and having to talk to mom about it. And I would go down and talk to her. I'd try to go to sleep and I'd toss and turn for an hour. And so I'd finally go downstairs and mom would just sort of talk me through it and said, no, Scott, there's no logical reason to think that. And I remember we got through that part of my life. And that was probably maybe a 6 to 12 month span of time. And I'm so blessed that now I'm at the age of 66 and I've gotten real comfortable with the fact that death is absolutely a part of life. And I know my faith informs that comfort level for me, but I just think of how lucky I was to have mom walk me through those kinds of fears that happen as we're approaching those adolescent years. I'm just extremely grateful.
That's really cool. So what made you decide to go to medical school? Why did you want to become a doctor?
I didn't. I was going to become.
Okay.
My mom and I had come up with, because she knew so much about me and she knew I liked the sciences and math. And yet she also knew that I was a little squeamish about people throwing up and pus and blood. And so we thought that dentistry would be a fun career. I had had braces when I was a kid. And so mom and I had always sort of dreamt that I would go into dental school and become an orthodontist. And so fast forward, I went to the University of Minnesota and got a degree in physiology. And I applied to dental school actually a year early. You're supposed to normally have a 4-year degree, but they did have a program where you could get in after 3 years. And just as I was being accepted into dental school at the University of Minnesota in 3 years, tragically, my mom was diagnosed with colon cancer. And so we were going through the process of her health undergoing profound changes. And she had surgeries and chemotherapies. And just as I was saying yes to dental school, she died at the age of 49.
Oh my.
So I struggled mightily. I lost my best friend. I lost my mom. I lost the person who shared my dreams. And so I went to dental school and typical Scott Jensen, I dove in feet first. And so I ran for class president and I was elected class president, not based on any skills that I had, but because the first day of class, I had asked probably the dumbest question you could ask when I asked the professor to explain the difference between wisdom teeth and third molars, because I didn't know they were the same. And so the whole class sort of decided to elect me because who else would ask such a stupid question? So over that first year of dental school, I learned that I just did not have any fascination or even strong affection for teeth. I loved anatomy. I loved biochemistry. I loved physiology, but I just wasn't happy. And I'm sure that part of it was grieving my mom's death. So I did the logical thing. I went to the dean of the dental school and asked for a leave of absence. And he asked me, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to go to the seminary. So I went to the seminary for a year. And in that year, I made two big decisions. The first one was I was dating this really hot chick. And I decided to ask her to marry me. And she's now been my wife for 43 years and the love of my life. And then the second big decision I made was I decided to go into medicine and become a family practice doc. And both of those decisions worked out incredibly well for me. So that's how I ended up being a doctor, was because I was actually going to be a dentist, but I found out that teeth were not going to sustain my interest for a life.
Wow, that's a great story. And it's a great transition. Why did you went to seminary and you decided that wasn't going to, that isn't what you wanted to do either if you were only there for a year, right?
I learned in seminary one thing about me that I wasn't terribly pleased about. And it is still a part of me. I learned that I was willing to be excessively blunt if I thought it was the truth. And that has gotten me in trouble more than once. I think it comes from my nature as a skeptic. But I realized that if I was going to become a Master of Divinity recipient and go take a church on as a pastor, I would probably tick off a lot of my parishioners because I would most likely say something that they didn't want to hear. And that's tough for a minister. Here's an example. So I had a patient in earlier today that I saw, and she had a lot of complaints. And she said, well, why is this happening? I said, you've never been this old before. And it's true. And she wasn't an old person, but she was approximately my age. And she said, well, what does that have to do with it? I said, that's why Betty Davis said something like, growing old is not for sissies. It's tough work to grow old and to do it with grace and accept the aches and the pains and the fact that you don't sleep well and that when you eat a certain kind of food, you have indigestion for a day or two. It's tough work, but then you say, well, what's the alternative?
Exactly. And I hope she got the point, because I can kind of relate to that.
I think she got the point. She may not have liked the point.
Exactly. But that's really true. I remember seeing a patient one time that she came in and she was, her chief complaint was bilateral knee pain. And she was 5'2" and pretty close to 300 pounds. And she sat in a chair and we were talking about her knees. She said, my knees really hurt bad. And I just looked at her and she said, it's my weight, isn't it? And I said, I think it's your weight. You know, and I explained to her some of the physics behind weight and what it does to knees and stuff like that. And she said, I guess I just needed somebody to just kick me in the butt like that and get me to get real. So I didn't see her again for like a year. And when she came in, she'd lost like 150 pounds. And she came in just to tell me that she was so grateful that I'd been so honest with her and just, we're not going to do x-rays. We're not going to do blood tests. We're not going to see if it's your weight. And she said, I really needed to hear that. And it was the thing that I needed to springboard forward. And she came back because she lost 150 pounds and her knees still hurt. And she wanted to know if we could do some other things at that point. And so then it was really fun because we talked about various different things that we could do. And so anyways, yes, I understand. I was told one time by a friend of mine in Texas, and she had that deep Texas drawl. And she says, Dr. Sherry, you use truth like a blunt instrument. So it sounds like you have a little of that characteristic in you too.
I do. I remember one when I decided to leave the Senate a couple of years ago in preparation for my wife going through a real health journey. I remember one of the journalists wrote an article about me departing, and I think it said something like this. He said, we're going to miss Dr. Jensen in the Senate because he's candid, smart, and unpredictable.
Oh, those are great characteristics.
And I think that's who I am. And I think that I'm probably not as unpredictable as people realize, but I think sometimes I say things that people would say, well, you're not supposed to say that. And I probably color outside the lines a little bit.
How did you decide to go into become a politician? And did you go directly towards the Senate? Was that your first step into politics, or what was that journey like?
It wasn't much of an itinerary. I was in school board for 10 years because when my kids were going to school, I was asked by some of the school board members at the time if I would help lead the charge on getting a new school built. And that was really my first foray into that arena. And after we were able to get that building referendum passed, I decided that this was interesting. And so I went ahead and did 10 years on the school board. And it was interesting and it was stressful. You're clearly under a magnifying glass when you're on a school board in a local community, because parents rightfully are passionate about education. But I thought I was done then. My dad had been in politics, but I didn't think I really had much desire to do it. And I really loved being a family doc. So I was very comfortable that 10 years as a school board member was enough for any lifetime. Then my wife and I in 2015 went to Israel, and we sort of traced the steps of Jesus' life with a group of about 30 people from a church. And had a wonderful time. And it was religiously a meaningful experience and spiritually a profound experience. And 5 days after we got back, I was called by a legislator asking if I would run for the Senate because that seat was opening up. And I remember my response was something like this: gee whiz, I am flattered, but I'll pass and say no thank you. But whatever it was that caused you to call me, if you're smoking something, you should come back. And they laughed and they persisted. And then they recruited community members. And after a 2-month period of time, my wife and I felt convicted by that verse from Esther 4:14. Have you considered you're in the position you're in for such a time as this? And I had been pushed hard because healthcare was the elephant in the room. K through 12 education was the largest line item on the state budget. And I'd been on school board for 10 years. And I had also been involved in numerous area transportation projects, and transportation is a big part of being a state legislator. So those three skill sets that I developed in my lifetime would likely help me be a senator. So I went in, worked hard, was vice chairman of the Health and Human Services Committee. I learned so much. I also learned very much what I did not like. I don't really like politics. I oftentimes don't like a good share of the behavior of politicians. I love the service commitment that so many political people, elected people have, but sometimes that service is overshadowed by the almost paranoid concern about how might this look at my next election, or how might this sound if I actually say the truth. And oftentimes conversations that would be challenging will be avoided because political people might fear that the conversation might go in a direction that can't be controlled. And I despise that, because I think as a country, we were literally born from a group of colonists who basically said, there is no conversation that cannot be had, and that we have to have it. And that the people who represent us should be people from our community. They should be citizen legislators, stepping away for a period of time, serving, and then coming back into the community to do that which they have learned and been trained in a lifetime to do. But we don't have that. We have a whole professional class of professional politicians that have sort of taken a hold of these senator and representative seats and laid claim to them and said, this is my seat and I don't have to give it up. And so we suffer because of that.
I agree. And that really wasn't that way back at the beginning when the Greeks founded the concept of a republic, that's the way it was. And everybody had to serve, and they served for 2 years or four as a representative or 4 years as a senator. And that was it. There was no life for politicians. And that kept fresh ideas and fresh blood and people coming in from the fields, literally knowing what it was like to work in the field, to come in and talk to the people that were sitting in the state house. I've thought about that so many times, about that, how, you know, term limits, you know, stopping all this, and term limits on bureaucrats too, not just the actual elected official. I wanted to ask you about this investigations that were happening to you. I think you said three times, maybe four times, the state medical board was sanctioning your irrationally sanctioning your medical license with your impeccable medical career and political career. How did that impact? And you said it was a really rough period of time in the last 15 months. Tell us a little bit about how that impacted you personally, and how did you get through it?
That was hard, Sherry. That was hard. Three times, someone I never knew, an anonymous accuser, turned my life upside down, put me in a situation where I could lose my livelihood, not take care of the thousands of patients who have become friends of mine, for no reason other than political differences. And I ended up getting fact checked by so many various news sources. I mean, I certainly learned that to have a career as a fact checker probably has nothing to do with learning facts or understanding concepts, but far more to do with filling out an application for a job that you're not equipped to do. But it is what it is. But we got through it. I think part of what helped us get through it was perspective. I think perspective often helps us get through the challenges of life, whether it's a death of someone close to us, whether it's making an adjustment to an illness or a malady or disease that you never wanted to have. But I think perspective got me through a lot. And I see patients every day suffer so many things that I didn't suffer from. And then watching my wife go through a process of having numerous joints rebuilt and neck surgery and fusions and cancer scares, and have her watch her go through all that and keep, if you will, a stiff upper lip, keep the essential characteristics of her personality in place. She was always able to laugh, smile, do something for someone. And with her husband, she maintained the ability to be stubborn even when I was right. Just kidding. And all of those things that she did gave me the perspective to get through what I was going through. And I would say, Sherry, that I have successfully developed thicker skin. I don't know that I'm at that place of an iguana, but I'm getting there. And so to all my detractors and the unfair accusations and the name callers, I want to say thank you, because you've helped me grow. You've taken a kid who maybe was a little too addicted to approval from others, and you've let me see the folly in letting someone else alter my equilibrium. And so I'd say thank you to all of those unfair, unreasonable, demonizing individuals.
Wow, that is an incredible perspective. And it is true. From a physician's perspective, there's two things that just completely upend your life on a professional basis. You know, hard-handedness from the state medical board and frivolous malpractice cases, which something, the statistics are something like 8 or 9 out of 10 are frivolous, and how it upends your life and shakes your confidence and kind of like shakes you down to your core. And I'm sure your faith and your perspective with God, probably a lot of prayer time probably went into those durations of that, those investigations too, right?
It did, no question about it. And I think I'd probably say faith, family, and freedom are the three cardinal things that would get me through some of those challenging times. But I do think patients teach me every day. And I have had patients that have had such incredible grace and gratitude in regards to dealing with the circumstances of their lives, which the average person might look at their lives, those person's lives, and say, yuck, I would never want that life. And yet there's this patient who has taken of their life incredible sadnesses and made this beacon of a well-lived, beautiful personality. And I just get to get touched by that virtually every day. And it makes me want to be a better person.
That's beautiful. Taken together the experiences that you've had with your medical school and then becoming a physician, a very prominent physician, to be family practice a physician of the year. I mean, that's really quite an honor. I mean, that's a really big deal to be awarded amongst your peers. It really is. And then your time in the Senate, and now you're running for governor. If you could take a 30,000 foot view, if you could get way above the world and look at all the COVID stuff and everything that's going on right now, what would you say is the biggest problem in the world today?
I think we got to get the love thing right. And we're not. In our church, our minister says words to this effect. Let me think about this a moment, because I want to get it right. But if we could see others as God sees them, if we could do unto others as we would want them to do unto us, and if we could love others as God loves us, the world would be a better place.
Boy, that's profound and really sums it up, doesn't it? Do unto others
We need to see others as God sees them. We do not need to see others as this cantankerous, overly opinionated, Archie Bunker kind of character. If we can see them as someone's dad, someone's son, someone's spouse, someone's friend, someone's coworker, if we can do those things, we can recalibrate how we deal with them.
I believe that that's really good. I believe that that's really a great perspective on what real love is supposed to be. You know, love your neighbor as you would like to be loved is really an incredible place to come from. And all of those perspectives, have you had a significant aha moment in your life of something that happened that just popped, that maybe changed your course or changed your trajectory somehow?
Well, I think I probably had several, but I know I read a book, a series of books back in 1976 that were to commemorate our country's 200 years. And it was written by John Jakes. It was a series, and the first one was The Bastard, and then it was The Rebels, The Warriors, The Seekers, The Furies. Anyway, it was a series of 8 books. And there was this fictionalized character in there whose mantra in life was, take a stand and make a mark. And that was Philip Kent. And take a stand and make a mark. That was powerful for me. I remember reading Ayn Rand in Atlas Shrugged. And John Galt was one of the key characters in it. And he says something to the effect, I will not live my life for anyone else, nor will I ask anyone else to live their life for me. I always pondered that. And I thought, that doesn't sound nice. But I think within the context of what he said, I was able to distill this message. I will die for others. I will die for my family, my children, my grandchildren. I will die for someone else, but I will not live for someone else. And there's a huge distinction. I'll give up my life to die for someone, but I won't live for them. In other words, the day-to-day decisions I make, I mean, honestly, even with this COVID thing, Sherry, I have brought ridicule on me and my family unintentionally at a level that I would never have dreamt. And it hurts me that I've done that and that some family members have had to experience the harshness of that ridicule. And yet I don't think I could do anything other than what I'm doing. I have to live my life for me. And while I'm willing to give up my life for someone, I'm not willing to live my life for someone else. So that's been big. And then I think the other thing, the physical thing that happened in my life that perhaps influenced me powerfully was talking to an administrator in a hospital morgue at midnight and learning that they had a broken, fractured, dead cadaver on a gurney in their morgue, and that they thought it was my brother and that they needed my help, because all that person had on them when they jumped from the 18th story of a hotel was a small piece of paper that said Scott Jensen with my phone number. But they wouldn't let me come down and identify the body until 5 o'clock in the morning because of some operational details. So from midnight to 5, I wrestled with what I might learn. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, I went down and indeed I identified my brother's broken body. And the amount of dissatisfaction one can experience regarding their own inability to somehow be there for someone that you would have wanted to be there, and to realize that you weren't there, that somehow your best efforts, or maybe less than your best efforts, wasn't enough to prevent a terrible catastrophe. I think that was one of those aha moments where, from that point on, everything else took on a certain different perspective of what really matters.
Which is?
A lot of the stuff we deal with and get pretty frustrated with and pretty anxious about is, quite frankly, just noise. The essential aspect of living life, living well, taking a stand, making a mark, getting the love thing right. That's what matters.
That is really profound. And I think a good place to end our interview, because that will, our conversation, because that is a really good take home message for everyone who's listening to our premium interview today, of getting the love right and making a determination in your personal life what really matters and what's noise. That's really profound. Thank you so much, Dr. Scott Jensen. Thank you so much for being vulnerable and being transparent and allowing us to see a little bit behind the scenes on who you really are and why we really want government officials like you to represent us and lead us forward out of this abyss place that we're in our country. So thank you so much. Any additional closing thoughts you'd like to add?
Hebrew 4, verse 14. Do not let go of the beliefs you profess.
Yep, that's really true. Stay true to your heart, stay true to your God. And I like that idea of figuring out what's important and what's noise, because so much of the noise we think is important and it really isn't. So thank you so much for this time that we've spent together today. I will cherish this discussion for a very long time. This has been very revealing and very candid, and I feel both grateful and honored to learn more about you personally, Dr. Scott. I really do. So we close out today. I want to say a special thank you to our premium members. It's your monthly support that makes this work, these phenomenal conversations and other things that we do, it makes it possible. So to be sure to support Dr. Scott Jensen for his run. If you're from Minnesota and you're listening to this, you've got friends or family members in Minnesota, make sure you support his run for governor that he announced, and his new book that's going to be coming out just in the next month or so, titled The Day the Doctor Told the Truth. Ooh, baby, I can't wait to read that one. That's going to be awesome. So you can find all of our links for all of our educational information, our Vaxter account, our courses at Learning for You, our upcoming boot camp this fall, all the things that we've done on our podcast. You can find them all just by going to drtenpenny.com, hover over the navigation bar, and it's all located in one place. And with that, I always close with a word from the Bible, one of my favorite verses, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until we meet again on our next broadcast, stay strong, stay close to God. He'll never let you down. We'll see you again next week. Take care, Dr. Scott. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Take care.